This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Our weekend review on this Friday is starting with Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey. She's been in the headlines on several issues all week, including immigration.
My heart goes out to our immigrant communities who have experienced tremendous fear and anxiety. The answer is yes, you are safe. I've got your back, your mayor has got your back, and there are people all across the state that have got your back, and the governor has been clear about this as well.
Healey's comments came on the national so-called Day Without Immigrants yesterday. That's when businesses across the country shut down and some people refused to spend money to show how much immigrants contribute to the country. Vanity Fair this week called Healey the threat that President Trump never saw coming. We'll talk about this and more with our panelists this week. Joining us in studio is Arlene Isaacson, co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Hello.
Hi, Deb.
Also with us is Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Good to see you.
It's good to be with you.
So let's start with this Vanity Fair piece about Attorney General Healey. It suggests that Healey could be one of the most effective adversaries of the president because of some of her legal actions and her outspokenness. And just want to play a little bit of tape here of what Attorney General Healey said at the Boston Women's March on Boston Common last month. Let's listen.
I have a message for President Trump. The message for the people of Massachusetts: we'll see you in court.
That was State Attorney General Maura Healey. Jim Sturgis, I'm wondering, what do you think of Maura Healey's actions here?
Well, you know what? Look, I think that she is being smart politically, and I think that she is being respectful in the way she does it. She said, I'm going to use the institutions against you. We have institutions in this country for a reason. If you disagree with somebody, you use them. What I would also say is, in addition to the courts, especially, for example, as regards the subpoena from the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee, which was looking into Maura Healey and also Attorney General Schneiderman in New York, his their investigation of folks who have views that may not align on climate change. What's interesting there is a renewal, whether in her office or I think more broadly among people in the Democratic Party, to look at institutions, for example, like federalism, to say, look, we have state sovereignty, of state rights. We can actually exploit these to the full degree. We can push back on your agenda. So I think it's a respectful, a thoughtful way of going at it.
And I'm wondering, Arlene, what do you think of this and the national attention as well?
Well, I think she's been doing a great job on this. When what Jim was just talking about, her going after, for example, Exxon for accusing them of fraud, for encouraging climate change confusion all these years, when decades ago their scientists had well established the fact that petroleum products and fossil fuel burning contributes to global warming, that it would inevitably end in a global temperatures increasing and the dangers that would be there. I love the fact that she's going after them, whether or not they committed fraud for their investors and their customers. You know, to borrow a line from the NRA, who isn't wild about Maura, the best way to stop bad guys with a lot of lawyers is to have a good AG with a lot of lawyers. And if we don't have somebody like her taking on corporations that will be protected by Trump, I don't know who's going to do it for us.
Hmm. Well, as long as we're on the topic of ExxonMobil, she did say, Maura Healey said, she's not going to comply with a new subpoena from the Congressional Committee seeking documents in connection with this fight with ExxonMobil. I mean, what do you think of that?
Bully for her. I mean, firstly, yeah. Most people think that the Congressional Committee doesn't have jurisdiction to intervene in a state investigation to begin with. But on top of that, it's clearly a question of harassment. One of the other members of that very congressional team, who knows that the chairman of that committee is a climate change denier, or let's call him a skeptic at best, and other congressmen on that committee are saying that the committee is being used to harass climate scientists, and that it's a serious misuse of congressional oversight. So I'm thrilled she's standing up to them. We need her to do that.
Jim Sturgis, what do you think of her not complying with this?
I think she's going to lose that battle pretty clearly. I also would say, look, on investigating Exxon, that's one thing. I think in terms of investigating, let's say, a Richard Lindzen at MIT, who's a very serious climatologist but who disagrees, I find that is chilling. That is chilling to free speech, and I'm big on free speech, so I don't like that very much. On the other side, I'd say it's very hard not to comply with Congress because Congress has the power of inquiry, especially when it relates to something they could legislate on or they have legislated on. So I think her noncompliance will crumble. It will take time. And again, this is how you use the courts as well. And she's trying to gum things up. And our institutions allow for that. So I don't think it's smart politically. I don't think she'll win that battle.
Hmm. Do you think she is positioned as one of the national leaders against President Trump?
I don't think so, no.
No. Arlene?
I don't know that she was positioned previously, but she's becoming so. Hmm. She's clearly going to become, she is and will become even more so, I believe, a loud, strong, very smart voice in opposition to whatever legal opposition we could generate. She'll clearly be on the front line. She's very comfortable doing it. So, and she's smart. She's articulate. She's got good policy positions that are very much different from the president. So I think she has a very good shot at becoming more and more visible.
Hmm. Well, when we talk about visibility and we talk about some of these moves and what they might or might not mean politically, there, of course, have been lots of suggestions, lots of speculation about why she might be doing some of this. And she was floated as a potential gubernatorial candidate. Might she challenge Charlie Baker? But she was asked about this. She spoke with the Globe yesterday, and she insisted that she's going to seek re-election again in 2018. Here she is talking with the Globe's Josh Miller.
Your message to Democrats who are looking for a candidate is find another candidate for governor no matter what. It's not going to be me in 2018. Is that right?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm sure there'll be, and there are already some announced candidates, and, you know, we'll see what that field looks like. But I am focused right now, Josh, I am really focused on the work that we've got to do. And as I say, we've got our hands full right now.
So, Jim Sturgis, what do you think? She's probably not going to seek election as governor in 2018.
In all of these things, like she would be running against a governor who's quite popular. I think she's in wait-and-see mode is my guess, and probably leaning not to do it. I think she's says what she means. I like listening to people when they say stuff. So I believe she's actually not thinking about it actively. But let's say we see a decline in Baker's popularity, and we see that Seti Warren and Jay Gonzalez don't catch fire. Hmm. I think there'll be quite a lot of pressure, and to be courted is a lovely thing in politics.
Hmm. But isn't the reputation in Massachusetts the attorney general never makes it to the governor's office?
That's exactly right.
That's right. That's in the history. It's a strange and interesting history.
So is there another office that might be more suitable? Arlene, any thoughts
sure she,
on that?
I doubt very much that she'll be running for governor, both for the reasons that Jim mentioned and the historical point that you just made. But I'm sure. But she will certainly.
Hey, the Red Sox did it, right?
True that. I think she's going to be well positioned for a number of higher office possibilities in the future when we see which seats become free, and she will, I think, play an increasingly large role statewide and nationally as well.
Okay, so let's talk about immigration as well, because this was another big issue in the news and everywhere else. With Attorney General Healey and, of course, nationally, I'm wondering, first off, let's just talk about the Day Without Immigrants yesterday here in Massachusetts and the continuing fight here. Who's a sanctuary city? What's happening? I mean, how do you think we're going to see this issue play out, particularly with political candidates? Jim?
So let me go to the issue first. I think the issue is that at the end of the day, the federal government has a lot of money that it gives to cities and can use that as a lever that will be for some punishing. New York City, you can't imagine what they would do if they lost $10.4 billion, which is what they get from the federal government. Not all of that, I think. An executive action by Trump could actually stop. There's a lot of that money that would have to flow anyways. But it is a concern whether it's you're the mayor of Somerville and you're trying to think this through. There is a big risk there, and especially with someone who's really creates a lot of uncertainty. President Trump is, by definition, he walks into a room, there's a lot of uncertainty. You don't know what he's going to do next. So it is a big risk. I would say this state is a state that supports immigrants, and that includes undocumented, illegal, however you want to call that, immigrants. We are welcoming, I think, the idea that, for example, there was a proposal that was floated perhaps from within the Homeland Security Department. They were thinking about calling up 100,000 National Guardsmen. We're not sure if that's a White House position. I think it's they said no. That's something that Massachusetts folks
would... I think they said it was an original part of a proposal, but it is no longer considered part of a proposal. So,
That's something that doesn't fly here.
Right, and we should actually say that Governor Baker issued a statement about that, saying that he is against the use of National Guard troops, and it wouldn't affect Massachusetts either. And so it's obviously a big issue. You know, we had a lot of protests at Logan Airport when the president's executive order came out. We've got a lot of very strong feelings about that. A lot of people in this state anxious. We've been reporting on folks who are very anxious about this. I'm just wondering, we're not in a bubble here. Are there political leaders who you think will take a different position here than what the majority might do?
You know, we're seeing two different kinds of reactions. Actually three. On the one hand, we're seeing the legal actions, you know, the ACLU lawyers who were at the airport, at Logan Airport, when Trump announced the travel ban, and they were up there till the wee hours of the morning in courts fighting it. Then Attorney General Healey joined in and have made a marked difference in the way the legal course that has happened since then. But we're sort of seeing three things happening. That's the legal piece. Then within the political realm, you've got the philosophy of values, and then you've got the practicality of day-to-day reality. And the philosophy is that, as Jim said, we're a welcoming state. And that's clearly broadly felt among many in our state, perhaps even, I would say, most. Then there's the reality that the reason that you'll see Chelsea and Lawrence filing suit against Trump's executive orders on this, and the reason that they want sanctuary cities to be protected and their police want sanctuary cities to be protected is because the reality on the ground is, for law enforcement purposes, they need sanctuary city protections. They need immigrant communities to trust the police. They need immigrant communities to report crimes, to not be afraid of reporting crimes. And that will, and were they to lose the sanctuary city status, that would most assuredly happen. And they're aware of that. So whether you do it for values reasons and philosophy, or you do it for the terra firma, we need the police to be effective, it's compelling in this state.
The president's promising a new executive action on immigration next week based on lessons learned from court fights on the first one. So I think this is going to continue. And I'm not sure, I don't know. I mean, do you have any thoughts, any predictions on what we might expect from here?
Sure. Deb, I think maybe one useful way to think about this is right now, the original line, if you will, the line of thinking by the Trump administration has not been embraced by really any state leader or regional leader in Massachusetts, with the exception of Sheriff Hodgson. Mm-hmm. I don't think that will change.
He, of course, offered folks to help build
the
wall.
Mm-hmm. But what I would say is Trump's MO is to move goalposts, to say something outrageous and keep pushing it, until what seems outrageous in the discourse becomes the outer edge, and he can push for certain things. And I think once that happens, you will see perhaps a more moderate proposal, and you will see some political leaders accept that on the basis of rule of law. I don't think it'll be any big thing here in Massachusetts, but I think that we'll have much bigger ramifications on the southern border.
So let's move on. I want to talk about some other issues. Another topic, really, with local implications here, a national topic with local implications, and these are the unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud in New Hampshire. President Trump said that he would have won New Hampshire if not for the, quote, thousands of people who were brought in on buses from Massachusetts to vote illegally. This debate renewed when on ABC's This Week, George Stephanopoulos pressed Stephen Miller, a Trump advisor, and let's listen to what Miller said.
Go to New Hampshire, talk to anybody who's worked in politics there for a long time. Everybody's aware of the problem in New Hampshire with respect to
I'm asking you
bringing
as the
in
White House senior
hold
on a second. I'm asking you as the White House senior policy advisor. The president made a statement saying he was the victim of voter fraud, people
and the
being bussed from Massachusetts to New Hampshire.
The president was.
Do you
and
have any
is
evidence?
An issue,
Oh, okay. So there we go. Do you have any evidence? There was no evidence cited, but again, this is something that has come up several times here in terms of voter fraud allegations in New Hampshire. I'm wondering, Arlene, what do you think? Why do we continue to hear this from the Trump administration about the vote count in New Hampshire?
You know, this bears a striking resemblance to Trump's assertions that at 9/11 he saw thousands of Muslims cheering in New Jersey. And not only did he not see it, but he didn't see it because it didn't happen. So there is not a shred of evidence that his assertion about voter fraud in New Hampshire, or really elsewhere, to be quite honest, is true. And what we're seeing now are he has a campaign official, his campaign folks are saying it, but the New Hampshire Secretary of State is calling the allegations false. And more interestingly, a lot of prominent Republicans in New Hampshire are all saying it's an absurd accusation, whether it's Steve Dupre, a former state committee chair, or Tom Rath, a former state attorney general, or Fergus Cullen, a former state Republican attorney state chairman. They're all saying it didn't happen. So the question is, if you look at it, the governor was won by a Republican. If there were thousands of people, and other seats were run by Republicans, if thousands of Massachusetts voters were illegally going to New Hampshire to vote, they would have voted Democrat across the board, and Sununu would not be the governor right now.
Well, you know, you speak about there were many, many prominent folks who have completely debunked this theory, but there are some who have not. We, on Radio Boston, spoke with former New Hampshire State Rep Stephen Stepanek. He was co-chair of Trump's campaign there. And he told us that he takes issue with the same-day voter registration requirements in New Hampshire and other things. Let's listen.
I've coined the phrase, if you're in the New Hampshire state of mind, you can come up to New Hampshire and vote. And essentially what that means is you have to just state that you feel that you want to live in New Hampshire and have a domicile for a day, and you can vote in New Hampshire.
Okay. Jim Sturgis, what do you think of those comments from the co-chair of Donald Trump's presidential campaign in New Hampshire?
Look, my view is there is illegal voting going on. We used to have a good amount of it with Tammany Hall and all the urban legends around the 1960 JFK election. We haven't grown angel's wings since then, not that I've noticed. But if you follow the data suggests that if there are issues, they're rather infinitesimal. Now, there isn't much evidence, whether it's the Pew Research that the President Trump cites or other research that he cited across time. It's a guy named Jesse Richmond that he cited frequently. Jesse himself says he doesn't feel like his research is being used appropriately.
Right.
And even if you took Jesse Richmond's research and you went to the outer edge of the number of votes that could have been impacted in the last presidential election, he said it couldn't go beyond 800,000. So we
across
are
the country.
Across the country. What you originally asked, what are they up to? And I would say what President Trump is trying to do is to create a narrative that he can build upon. And that narrative would lead to a Department of Justice investigation of voter fraud. Is it happening? What do the roles look like? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I, in principle, have no issue with data or doing an investigation. The problem is, whatever comes out of any kind of investigation, if you find a small bit of illegal voting, okay, what do you do about it? And does it chill the participation of folks who would be scared to actually go there anymore? So this is one where it drives me crazy, because we could have a reasonable conversation and we could ferret out the 0.something% illegal votes, and we could make some changes that we might need to make. Okay, got it. Because we want to preserve the franchise. It could lead to some messy stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think Jim makes a very good point. There is inevitably some degree of voter fraud that might be taking place, but it is likely infinitesimal. One of the ironies of Trump's assertion is that the one place where we know for sure people have claimed residence in a different state, even though they were registered in two states, were the Trump family and allies, his kids, you know, people on his campaign staff who several months ago, there were big headlines about the fact that they were registered in one state and they voted in a different state. So it does exist. but I don't think it's determinative of the outcome.
Right. Well, I think it's all about his election victory to a certain degree, which was among the topics at a very wide-ranging press conference yesterday that the president held that lasted for more than an hour, was called only about an hour or two before it was scheduled to start. And among the things that the president talked about, of course, was Russia, because that has been a lot in the news lately. And he was asked about reports that his staff was in touch with the Russians during his campaign, and President Trump said nobody that he knew of spoke with Russian intelligence. Let's listen.
Can you just say
Russia
yes or no
is
on
a
it?
Ruse? I know you have to get up and ask a question, so important. Russia is a ruse. I have nothing to do with Russia. Haven't made a phone call to Russia in years. Don't speak to people from Russia. Not that I wouldn't, I just have nobody to speak to.
So that was President Trump talking about Russia and reports about his campaign staff being in touch with Russia. So I'm just wondering, what strikes you from those comments about Russia, Jim Sturgis, and also just about the press conference in general? What kind of stood out for you?
Nothing stood out that was abnormal from what we'd seen in the campaign. It was sprawling, unwieldy. He enjoyed the hell out of it. He called out people rightly,
wrongly.
He
wasn't ranting and raving so much. He enjoyed it, apparently, yeah.
The key word seemed to me, nobody that I know of. We know that the FBI was at least, I don't want to say investigating, but they were sort of tracking the communications of Paul Manafort, of Mike Flynn, of a couple of other folks that were working on the campaign. This is one where I think Congress, even Republicans who may be concerned with the temperament of the president, may look to use an investigation to tether him to the ground so he actually starts behaving a little bit. I don't think that'll work, but I think we're in for some investigation at some point. It's not going to happen soon, but this is not going to die down for months.
You know, one of the things that I find striking is that they say that the Justice Department warned the White House last month about Flynn's conversations with Moscow and the possibility that he might be vulnerable to blackmail from Moscow. Mm. So Trump and his administration has known for a month about Flynn, and yet nothing happened. He did not fire him until just the other day for supposedly lying to Pence. The question is, did he lie to Trump? Well, Trump, whether he did or not, Trump has known for a month that it was a lie if he did. So Trump has known the truth and took no action. That's bad management by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, another thing I just want to make sure that we get in here before that we talk about a little bit before we go is also about the president's attacks on the media. I'm, of course, particularly interested in this, but he again, when he was asked about his now-resigned National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, he talked about leaks to the media about what Mr. Flynn may or may not have said to the folks in Russia. And, of course, he said that this was based on information that was leaked to the media. Let's listen to this bit of what the president had to say.
Well, the leaks are real. You're the one that wrote about them and reported them. I mean, the leaks are real. You know what they said. You saw it. And the leaks are absolutely real. The news is fake because so much of the news is fake.
So I'm just wondering, I mean, is this truly a campaign on the part of Trump to discredit journalists who might be his critics?
Absolutely. You know, Trump does not let the facts get in the way of his opinions, unfortunately,
but
in too many instances.
But that's how he's been across the board.
Yes, mm-hmm. It has been. Yeah. That has been the case. And he also has, as a result, a sort of Orwellian approach to communicating, which is if you keep saying something, even when you know it's not accurate, some people will believe it, and then that will grow to more people who will believe it. And he rather brilliantly takes his opponent's words and then makes them his own weapon. So fake news, where did that come from? It was a tool used against the Clinton campaign, like the Pizzagate issue, right? But who ends up using fake news now? Trump. The very thing his people are accused of doing, he now uses as a weapon against the media.
Thoughts, Jim?
Look, one thing I'm fearful of with President Trump is that there's a big game going on here within the EPA, within the Department of Justice, the intelligence services, and the media. He has this perception that everyone's kind of arrayed against him. The leaks and going to the media back and forth reinforce that view. Things like paranoia set into situations like that. You'll remember that Richard Nixon, at the very end of his administration, was like him and three people sitting in his office. And I think one of the things he's going to try to do is to get out and do a lot of rallies because he wants to get the heck out of Dodge for a little bit to kind of clear his head, one hopes. We'll see how it goes out. This relationship will not get any better. And the idea of actually incorporating many other different media voices, some of which are very non-traditional, is his way of saying that everyone is going to be treated on an equal footing. No one's given more prestige than another. He'll be playing that game for the entire term.
All right. Well, we are out of time, so I want to thank both of you for going over some of the news of the week, and we have so much more that we didn't even get to, but thanks anyway. Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute. Thank you.
It's great to see you.
Arlene Isaacson, Co-Chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus.
Great to
thanks.
Be here.
Okay. Stay with us. Coming up, the new face of manufacturing in Massachusetts. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.